Welcome to Nevada Newsmakers. On the broadcast today, the chief scientist for the International Space Station, Julie Robinson, for the whole show on an all-new Nevada Newsmakers.
Nevada Newsmakers is brought to you in part by the Tahoe Reno Industrial Center, Pro Group Management, and the Retail Association of Nevada.
St. Ives Florist, for every holiday and every special occasion, for romance. Custom home design. We have the largest selection of fresh flowers in northern Nevada. And we also offer a large selection of unique gift items. Come see me, Lori Ann, at St. Ives Florist, 700 South Wells Avenue, or call me at 333-9190.
Sully's Sports Bar inside the Tamarack Junction is South Reno's headquarters for locals to watch all your favorite sports. And now you can enjoy your favorite team on our brand new high-def TVs featuring the Papa, the big daddy of them all. It's our giant 17-foot big screen TV wall. And we have two 79-inch high-def TVs, 12 65-inch high-def TVs, including two party booths for your own private party, and six high-def private booth TVs. Bring in your own headphones and listen to your favorite game right from your own seat. First, make your bets in our William Hill Sportsbook, then enjoy your favorite cold beer, libations, burgers, wings, pizza, and our signature build-your-own Bloody Mary bar. Then settle in and download our app and listen to any game being shown in Sully's Sports Bar. Catch your favorite team on our new high-def big-screen TVs. Sully's Sports Bar is the only place to watch your favorite sports all year long. The Tamarack Junction, just north of the Summit Mall in South Virginia.
It's Tamarack Junction, your junction for fun.
This is Nevada Newsmakers with host Sam Shan, a no-holds-barred political forum. Now, from the Nevada Newsmakers broadcast headquarters, here is Sam Shan.
And back on Nevada Newsmakers, we are very excited today to bring to you the chief scientist for the International Space Station, Julie Robinson. She's here in Reno to give a talk, Off the Earth, How Research on the International Space Station is Changing Our Lives Here on Earth and Our Future in Space. Pleasure to have you on the program.
Oh, it's great to be here.
And you're an alumni of UNR.
I am.
So let's start with this initial premise here. How is the space station changing our lives?
Well, you know, the space station is an amazing place where we can do research that can't be done anywhere else on Earth. When we are able to take gravity away, because as you see those astronauts floating out there, because of the free fall, it's like there's no gravity, and that changes every experiment we can do in physics, every experiment we can do in biology. We're able to use those processes to address things that are real problems here on Earth, whether it's making a stronger material or addressing a health issue or finding a way to fight a disease.
And you're in charge of all the sciences for all the different divisions, correct, on the space
station?
That's
right.
You know, it's funny. My wife has a tracking thing that we can look on the iPad and see when the space station is going overhead.
Yeah, yeah.
And you can literally stand outside here in Reno and watch the space station going by.
And it's brighter than any other object that's in the sky as it goes over. It's amazing.
Yes.
And fast.
It looks like a giant silver tin can.
Yeah.
Okay, so what experiments that are going on right now are exciting you the most?
Well, one experiment I'm really excited about is an experiment called fluid shifts. One of the things that we discovered in the last 10 years is that some astronauts, when they go into space, actually have vision loss. Not every astronaut, and a few of those astronauts have permanent vision loss. It isn't reversed when they return to Earth. And we've learned that that has something to do with the way that fluids shift into their heads when they don't have a gravity field pulling the fluid down into their feet all the time. And this experiment is one that we're doing collaboratively with our Russian colleagues. We do it in the Russian segment with U.S. ultrasound and with a Russian device called the Chibis, which is essentially a pair of sucking pants that can draw the fluids back down into their legs for a short period of time. We use the U.S. ultrasound to watch the fluids moving through their body, through their veins and so forth as that happens. And then we use special devices to measure their eyes as well to try and understand what's going on in this process. It's a disease process that we've never seen on Earth. It's completely new to science, and we're really trying to understand it so that we can someday send humans safely to Mars and have them able to carry out the mission successfully.
So, you know, it's not been reported, as I've seen in the media, that you have astronauts losing their vision.
Well, we generally don't report single individuals, so you wouldn't hear it in that kind of a media thing because we protect their medical privacy. But it was about 5 years ago that we first reported the pattern that we had seen. I think it took a while for us to see that pattern. You know, humans have been flying into space for a long time now, but we missed the pattern first because many times the humans were going for a short period of time. And then secondly, we thought, oh, they're just getting old. A lot of, you know, the average age of an astronaut is maybe 43. And that's about the age. It's not as old as it used to sound, is it? But a lot of times that's about the age people are when they start needing glasses. And so they'd come home and maybe their prescription was a little different. We just thought it was reversible. We didn't realize that it was a real problem until we started having enough experience on the space station, since it doesn't happen in everybody, that we had a few crew members coming home with such significant vision loss that people realized it wasn't normal. And then we started looking into those, doing extra imaging, did some spinal taps on astronauts and found out they still had really high spinal pressures. And we realized there was something going on here that really mattered.
How many different international groups are operating beyond the Russians on the spaceship?
So the space station is a partnership of five space agencies representing 15 nations. So it's the U.S., NASA, the Canadian Space Agency, the Japanese Space Agency, the Russian Space Agency, and the European Space Agency. And the European Space Agency is itself a conglomeration of space agencies. And that's how you get to the 15 countries.
And, you know, with all that's going on the planet, how is the cooperation in space?
The cooperation is amazing in space. You know, there's nothing like doing something peaceful and positive for science together that is in a life and death situation. So you have to get along well in space. You have to coordinate your operations. And everything that we're doing is hard, but also incredibly valuable.
Does it bother you that we still don't have a shuttle of our own to get up there?
Well, I'm really excited about the commercial crew missions that are coming up late next year, probably. You know, right now, we do have to launch our crew from Kazakhstan on a Russian rocket. And I'd like to have that U.S. capability back. But we've been building toward that. So, for example, our cargo that goes to the space station is now brought by two commercial companies, SpaceX and Orbital ATK. And they're sort of like the UPS and FedEx of space now. And eventually, SpaceX as well as Boeing will be providing that crew transportation. We also have another company coming on that's a Western-based company, Sierra Nevada Corporation, that will be flying cargo, and they even fly something that looks a little bit shuttle-ish, and it lands on land.
Right.
And so we're excited for that to come on as well.
How close are they? Because, I mean, people may not realize this, especially in Northern Nevada, but Sierra Nevada Corporation is huge, not just in Nevada, but around the country.
And so they're working through their different test milestones on their way to their first cargo launch, which is still a couple of years away. But I'm excited about that scientifically, because right now we have one way to bring cargo home. The Orbital ATK vehicle burns up. It doesn't return cargo. And so all of our cargo is returning on SpaceX right now. They splash down into the Pacific Ocean off the coast of California, and then we bring everything back to shore. Well, it takes a while to get samples back. And we would really like to be able to do certain kinds of biology studies and things where we could get the samples back in the hands of the scientists within an hour or two of landing. We used to be able to do that on the space shuttle, and Sierra Nevada will give us a capability where we can do that again.
Are we pretty much done as far as government funding for these kind of missions?
Well, so right now the space station is still primarily government funded, but in 2005, Congress declared it a national laboratory, which opened up the opportunity for other government agencies in the private sector to do research on the space station. Then in the Transition Authorization Act of 2017, so that's just earlier this year, they really encouraged us to look at better ways to commercialize and provide commercial access to expand low Earth orbit for economic development. So not just to do exploration missions and science, but also to start making low Earth orbit part of the economy, which could mean manufacturing, it could mean tourism, it could mean a variety of things.
Are you ready for that, for the tourism side of it?
Well, right now today, you wouldn't be able to do that because the vehicle we have in place today isn't designed for that. But right now we're doing some of our first testing. So there's a module attached called the BEAM, Bigelow Expandable Airspace Module.
From Southern Nevada?
Right, from Southern Nevada.
Robert Bigelow.
Yeah, yep, exactly. And that is an inflatable module. So rather than launching a heavy aluminum can, essentially, you can launch this. It's made out of these advanced textiles, and you can advance it all compressed and then inflate it later. So it allows the possibility of having a much less expensive launch and being able to put up something. And Bigelow says that he wants to have a hotel in space. eventually. And this would be the technology for that. So on the space station, we can test it, prove that it works in space. It didn't deflate. It, you know, when it has is struck by little micrometeoroids, it didn't fall apart. And so we're really getting a good sense of how well this performs. And that enables those future technologies someday.
Robert Bigelow is quite a character.
He is definitely a character. Entrepreneurs are always characters. And,
yes, indeed.
And there are a great number of entrepreneurs really moving into the space field.
And for people that want to know more about Robert Bigelow and his space travels, you can go back and look at the 60 Minutes piece they did last year. And it was fascinating. Let's take a break. More with Julie Robinson from the International Space Station right after this.
The signs and symptoms of cataracts can start out small with subtle changes in your vision. So don't wait. Be proactive and take your vision into your own hands. If you're experiencing the onset of cataracts or just have questions, contact your eye care professional or call Eye Care Associates of Nevada today. Dr. Hiss has years of experience specializing in the surgical correction of eye disorders and has completed over 84,000 vision-correcting procedures. At Eye Care Associates of Nevada, we'll change the way you look at the world.
Hi, my name's Marilyn Miner, and I'm sure you'd agree that Nevada's a very special place to live. I was born here, and my husband and I have raised our family here. I feel it's a privilege to live and work in the Truckee Meadows. I especially enjoy helping my clients reach their real estate goals. Sometimes the smallest details provide the greatest satisfaction. I'd be complimented to talk to you about your next move.
Call Marilyn Miner at Dixon Realty, 742-1280, or log on to marilynminer.com.
This is Nevada Newsmakers.
And back on Nevada Newsmakers, we continue our conversation with the chief scientist for the International Space Station, Julie Robinson. You know, it was interesting. Years ago, our former Senator Richard Bryan from Nevada got rid of SETI, the search for extraterrestrial life, because he was confident that the private world would pick that up. And that's exactly what happened. So do you envision just more and more private enterprise getting involved in space?
I do. And the way that I think about it, you know, being a Western girl, I was born in Idaho, so I grew up here and grew up learning about the Golden Spike and pioneers. And, you know, that westward expansion was fueled by a public-private partnership, right? The government made a deal with the railroads, recognizing if you could get transportation in place, and the railroads funded part of their expansion and the government provided part of that funding. But once you had that railroad in place, then things could continue to function and continue to develop. The government didn't have to fund absolutely everything because gradually the private sector took over. And that's essentially what's happening in low Earth orbit today, is that the government has sort of founded the idea, this first space station was primarily government sponsored, it would have been so hard to do and so expensive and so risky, nobody could have raised private funding for it. But once a company proves they can do something on the space station, maybe they're providing the transportation, maybe they're testing a module, maybe they would attach to the space station someday for a period of time. Once you have all of that together, then suddenly a company can make the business case for perhaps tourism or manufacturing or advertising, other kinds of things that we would never do on a publicly funded space station. But that's what the look of the space stations to, you know, of the future is going to be.
When you look at what's going on militarily in space, in the lower orbits, protecting the satellites for the United States, what are your thoughts about that?
Well, you know, at NASA and our whole space station partnership is really framed around the peaceful uses of outer space. And that structured what we've done at NASA as a civilian space agency over the years, clear back to the Apollo-Soyuz test project, right, where an astronaut and a cosmonaut were able to shake hands in the middle of the Cold War. So I think that because space can be strategically powerful, that's all the more reason for really emphasizing the peaceful uses, the business development, and really keeping that a neutral ground for everyone. And I think that's important long-term for us as a species, because exploration beyond Earth orbit is not something that any one nation can afford to do alone. But in fact, we can take the partnership, like the partnership we have on the space station, and continue to develop and innovate, move that cutting edge out, and have future international missions to near lunar space and then to Mars. So just a couple weeks ago, Russia announced their interest in that they and we are going to collaborate together on the Deep Space Gateway in cislunar orbit. And those kinds of things take the partnership we have today and continue to have it benefit mankind as a whole.
Do you have concerns about somebody launching an EMP and the effect it would have on the space station?
Well, we definitely worry about a variety of risks of things that could happen. And depressurization is a big risk. And that's something, now we track things, we work for that, we do debris avoidance maneuvers when we need to. So we definitely, you know, are aware of all of our risks and do what we need to do to keep the crew safe.
But I mean, EMPs especially, it strikes me that, you know, here on Earth, that a lot of power companies and water companies and others really don't take the threat of that as seriously as perhaps they might or should.
You know, that specific threat is folded into a larger set of things that could cause similar types of problems in space. And so we always really pay attention to the robustness of our systems. And one of the things we do is we have backup systems as well. And we have a lot of redundancy between the U.S. and the Russian system. And so we use that as part of our extra security for those kinds of catastrophic events.
Let's talk about the mission to Mars. How realistic is this, say, in the next 30 years?
In the next 30 years, it's absolutely realistic. But if somebody handed me a rocket that could go to Mars today, I would not be ready to be able to send the crew with it, because we still have enough knowledge that we haven't gained from the space station and from other tests to be ready to operate a mission safely and bring people home. Some of the things we got to tackle, we have to tackle radiation exposure and shielding. We have to tackle crew health and crew medical care. And we also need to deal with our life support systems, which we're still struggling with those working as well as we want on the space station. And we're going to test a whole new generation of those and be sure they're Mars ready.
Is this first trip going to be a one-way mission?
As a government mission, no. So, you know, the government's coming together. We would never send crew members who are essentially government employees out on a suicide mission. That would defy our medical ethics, and that's not the approach. And, you know, clear back to Kennedy starting the Apollo program, it was not just about going to the moon, but returning the crew home safely. That was important. Now, there are people out there who will propose having a one-way commercial mission, and that could happen on the commercial sphere at some point. But I think our technologies are not really ready yet to where a private company could afford even to get that one-year mission complete.
And they could
or
be
used one-way mission.
Yeah, they could be used for staging, for example, to get equipment and facilities there mm-hmm. prior to man, woman arriving on the surface of the Mars.
Yeah, I think we'll definitely stage a habitat, for example, an unoccupied habitat that's ready to receive crew members when they do get there. But and as you go to Mars, you know, even in a return mission, you can't come home whenever you want to. The laws of physics mean you can get there, and then if you have a problem, you can abort to the surface. And then you're going to have to wait till everything aligns up so that energetically you can get back home. So you've got to have a lot of contingency plans in place.
Man, there's a lot of thinking that goes into this, to say the least. You know, what's also fascinating to me is when you look at the space program from the early days, and people talk about how there was less computing power at the Johnson Space Center than there is in your phone currently.
Right, right.
Does that kind of blow you away?
Oh, it does and it doesn't, because you can go into the Apollo Mission Control Room, which is preserved as a historic site, and you can visit it as a tourist and see it, and you look at it, and it's pretty obvious that didn't have much power even in the control room, much less in the spacecraft itself.
All right, let's take a break. We'll come back with another segment here with Julie Robinson. She's the chief scientist for the International Space Station. We'll be right back.
Nevada Newsmakers is brought to you in part by the Tahoe Reno Industrial Center, Pro Group Management, and the Retail Association of Nevada.
Pro Group Management is the place where companies can find workers' comp solutions that are designed to meet their specific business requirements. As regulations evolve, Pro Group takes a proactive approach to clear the path to make sure your business stays ahead of the curve. Knowing your workers' comp program is optimized, you can focus on other important matters related to your growing business. Pro Group Management, workers' comp that works for you.
Nearly 200,000 Nevadans work in retail businesses, supporting families and the community. Nevada's retail businesses generated over $2 billion in sales tax revenue in 1 year, including nearly $700 million to help our schools. Shop around and see all that Nevada's retailers offer our state.
We're the Retail Association of Nevada, representing thousands of Nevada businesses.
Businesses that work for Nevada.
And now, back to Nevada Newsmakers with Sam Shad.
And back on Nevada Newsmakers, we continue our conversation with Julie Robinson. She is the chief scientist for the International Space Station, and we're really thrilled to have her on the program. One of the things that you lecture around the country on is women in science and engineering. Address this, if you would, for me. Are we advancing to the point, or are women actually taking over at this point?
Well, you definitely see things in a different light than when I was a student in school. So, you know, I think back when I took organic chemistry, the laboratory class had two women students in the whole class. All the rest were males. And I can even remember the professor wanting us two women to stand together by him in the class because he thought we would need more assistance. And he said that publicly and had us move. You know, so that world is long gone. Now, as undergraduates, as graduate students, as PhD students, we see the full student pipeline is well loaded with women, certainly in biology and chemistry, not so much in computer science. And that's a challenge that we still need to address because there's no evidence at all that women aren't as good at computer science. But there is some evidence that the social environment is a negative one and drives students away. But we still in science have a problem that at each stage of career advancement, we have women disappearing along the way. So if you look the number of, say, in biology, you actually have more women than men completing bachelor's degrees. But then a set of those women drop out. And when you look at the number of women, the percentage of women starting master's degrees, the percentage of women finishing master's degrees, finishing PhDs, the percentage of women that get faculty appointments or actually work in their field, the women are dropping out at a higher rate than the men. And then also, if you look at tenure, if you look at other measures of promotion. So something along the way in science is still discouraging women, and it's more systematic. It's not about their ability, but it's about either their willingness or the environment in which they're trying to be successful as scientists.
Yeah, and you know, you can go back to almost every other field at the beginning of the 20th century and see the same thing, that women, even though they wanted to get into fields like accounting and law, et cetera, were basically pushed away.
Right. And, you know, I mean, I'm at an agency now where our associate administrator was a woman, the head of the Johnson Space Station is a woman, our most recent chief scientist was a woman. So women have definitely done well in the agency. But you still look around the table at certain meetings, and you realize that it's still not even. It's definitely more even though than when I started. So I would say today I look around my staff meeting, the ISS program staff meeting. So I look at all the engineering managers plus myself that are on staff to the program, and it's 50-50 around the table. But when I started 10 years ago as chief scientist, there was just one other woman at the table. So it's definitely changed.
We are soon to have a new space telescope that will replace Hubble. It just seems beyond our imagination to see what we're seeing with the furthest reaches of space and the amount of time that we're looking at, the history that we're looking at.
Yeah, I think, you know, the thing that surprised everyone about Hubble were those deep space field images, which were never even in the original scientific plan. It was something people thought of later. Hey, let's try this. Let's see what we see. And that, I think, has taught us more about the nature of human life on Earth and the nature of our position in the universe than any other single image. It still, I think, inspires and also frightens us all a little bit to realize how vast space is and how many galaxies are out there.
And then that many more to be revealed,
right,
with the new telescope.
And so with the new telescope, I mean, the beauty of telescopes is if you can make a bigger, better, or more detailed telescope, you just open up the world and you open up time that much further back. And James Webb right now is actually at the Johnson Space Center in Houston, where I work, going through its vacuum testing. And during Hurricane Harvey, we had to do all kinds of things to protect it and take care of it and keep its vacuum testing going while all the floods were raging around. And it's just amazing what it takes, the engineering it takes, to successfully get a telescope like that deployed in orbit.
And that's where we have to leave it. What a pleasure to talk to you. Chief Scientist of the International Space Station, Julie Robinson, thank you so much for doing this.
It's been my pleasure.
And we'll be right back.
How do you shed some light on a better economy? Start with growth inspired by Valley Electric Association. We're a member-owned power company that puts Nevada first, and we're doing big things, like providing prosperity by securing renewable energy projects. For Nevada, that means more jobs and more opportunities, all for a strong statewide economy. In other words, together, we're doing powerful things. Visit us at vea.coop to learn more.
Early in the morning or throughout the night, professional truck drivers are on the job, serving you, safely moving freight that's crucial to our economy. From the oldest industries to our newest innovators, from the exotic to the everyday, trucks are everywhere, moving everything. Never afraid to embrace a future that makes Nevada and our nation stronger. Trucking moves America forward.
I'm Paul Enos, CEO of the Nevada Trucking Association.
You can download podcasts of Nevada Newsmakers free of charge from iTunes. We'll see you on the next broadcast.